Welcome, everyone, and thank you for standing by. All participants have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. To ask a question, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone, and please record your first and last name when prompted. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Bill Finerbrock. You may begin.
Thank you, operator. As she said, my name is Bill Finerbrock, and I am the Executive Director of the National Association of Rural Health Clinics, and I'm the moderator for today's call. Today's topic is Ask the Experts. There are no presentations today. Our speakers are a group of rural health clinic consultants who've agreed to make themselves available to take your calls or questions either as calls, and we had a number that were emailed in ahead of time. Let me quickly go through and let you know who's on the call. First, in no particular order, we have Steve Russo, who's the principal and co-founder of HFS Consultants, which is an employee management consulting and reimbursement firm based out of California, and they do a lot of work for hospitals and rural health clinics. Next, we have David James, who's a CPA and a financial officer. His specialty, he's with North American Healthcare Management Services, and he specializes in independent rural health clinic cost reports. Next, who I don't think has gotten on the call, but we'll have Glenn Biesink, who's Director of Clinic Development, and he works particularly on enrollment and compliance issues. He's with Midwest Healthcare. Next would be Jim Estes, who's the President of Healthcare Horizons. He specializes in RHC feasibility studies, annual evaluations, startups, and purchases. Next we'll have, and I don't know that he's on yet, but Mark Lynn, who's a rural health clinic consultant with Healthcare Business Specialist out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. He does RHC cost reporting, certification, annual evaluations, and billing. Janet Litton, who's Director of Reimbursement for Rural Health Development, and she specializes in RHC billing and coding. Then we have Robin Veltkamp, who's Vice President of Medical Compliance and Consulting Services with Health Services Associates. She's also a certified ICD-10 trainer. Then we have Julie Quinn, who's VP of Cost Reporting and Provider Education with Health Services Associates. She does Medicare and Medicaid cost reporting, rate setting, and financial analysis. And then finally, Jeff Johnson, who's a partner with Whipley CPA and Consultants, and he does RHC and hospital cost reporting. Operator, if you would give the instructions for people to who want to ask a question to do that. And then while we're waiting for those to get in the queue, we'll take some of the questions that were emailed in ahead of time for folks.
Thank you. To ask a question over the phone line, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Please ensure your line is unmuted and record your first and last name when prompted. You may be announced for your question. To withdraw your question, you may press star two. Once again, that is star one for any questions or comments, please.
Okay, and what I'm going to do is I'll take a couple of the emailed-in questions, and then perhaps we can open it up to the phone lines. We'll go back and forth. So the first one, and to our consultants, if you just kind of give your name and whoever wants to jump in, and then we'll give anybody who wants to add, and we'll try and keep track to make sure we have a relatively even distribution of folks have an opportunity to chime in. First up, can you clarify billing for venipuncture? If I understand it correctly, this code was no longer to be billed to our Part B carrier, but billed with our RHC claims. Can you clarify or expand on that or what should be done with regard to venipuncture?
This is Janet.
Anybody want to? Okay, go ahead, Janet.
The Medicare Benefit Policy Manual states that venipunctures are now a part of our encounter rate being paid. So a clinic would bill out their office visit services, also bill out their venipuncture services, and bundle that on the one-line item.
Okay. Anybody else want to add anything? Okay. Take another one from the emailed in. Need clarification on billing for Medicare Advantage patients. Note, no cost settlement agreement in place. Please review what should be the billing when there is no eligible face-to-face encounter, presumably an EKG performed on-site, therapeutic injection, or venipuncture service, or x-ray only. Anybody want to tackle a Medicare Advantage question? Okay.
I'll attempt it. When a Medicare beneficiary switches to a Medicare Advantage plan, those plans now become a private commercial insurance company, and you go by the regulations that that Medicare Advantage plans have in place. Now, those plans are supposed to pay you your rate if they're a private fee-for-service plan, or if they're a PPO or an HMO, you have to negotiate rates with those companies. There are companies out there that will pay you for nursing services only or injections only, but it's all across the board on how they will pay you, and you need to make communication with those companies to verify if you're billing them correctly or not correctly.
Okay. Operator, do we have some calls, questions from the callers?
I have one question in queue from John Trimble. Your line is open.
Go ahead, John.
My question is on maintaining employed mid-level providers. Does that half of the time that you're open have to be every month, or is it an average for the year? We happen to have a couple maternity leaves at the same time.
Folks, survey and certification. I think this is those of you.
This is Jim Estes. That's kind of up for grabs as far as what the inspector that's there doing a recertification survey determines when he gets there or she gets there. I've never seen them go with any more than a one-month period because that's typically a pay period they would utilize. So you can't look at the whole year, though, and say, well, for the full 12 months, we had a mid-level provider, a nurse practitioner, PA, or certified nurse midwife there half the time for a 12-month period. I've never seen them accept that because that means you went, you know, you could have gone 3 or 4 months without one of those providers in the clinic, and that would be in violation of the regulations. Any of the other consultants that have had experience with other inspectors, the states that I've been involved in, they wouldn't go about much more than a month. If they were looking at the most recent month prior to them being there, it's usually right when they're there. Do you have one now? You don't? Well, how long have you not had one here covering that halftime requirement? And if it's more than, you know, 3 weeks or so, they're going to give you a problem. If you think you're going to be without a PA, NP, or CNN for more than a month, you need to apply for a waiver from the state certification folks for a six-month waiver to let them know.
Yeah, Jim, this is David. This is David James. We actually had an experience in Indiana where any absence of a mid-level provider was considered to be non-compliant. And so if they were actually gone for their vacation week or any kind of even a short leave, they considered that to be non-compliant. Now, we disagreed with that, but this particular provider actually had to go out and get coverage for the mid-levels when they were actually even on vacation.
Hey, Bill, this is Steve Russo. Hey, Bill, on the RHC interpretive guidelines, they refer to the month schedule. So if they do a recertification survey, they'll see the schedule for the month, and they'll either be in compliance or not. So they use the month period, like Jim said.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you go to the NARHC website and you look under resources, you'll see a link that says RHC rules and guidelines. And if you scan down through there, it does talk about staffing and staff availability and the scheduling. And it does, as both have said, refers to looking at a monthly schedule. So, you know, they don't look at it on an annual basis, but more typically they're going to look at it on a month-to-month basis. Okay?
Okay.
This one is, we have several new directors that have never worked in an RHC before. Could you run through the cost report process and what dates they are due? They don't indicate that whether they're independent or provider-based. And if there's a difference, perhaps we could, you know, approach it once for if you're an independent or a provider-based, or if it's the same, what are the responses?
Well, this is Jeff Johnson. I can at least start us off. First of all, the due date for whether you're independent or provider-based is 5 months after the close of your fiscal year or calendar year. For most independents are calendar year, but hospital-based rural health clinics can have a variety of different year ends. But either way, it's 5 months after the end of your fiscal year. And the cost report that for independents, they file a separate cost report. It's a cost report just specific for rural health clinic, independent rural health clinics and federally qualified health centers. It's the same cost reporting form. For the hospitals, it's based for the provider-based rural health clinic, it's part of the hospital's overall cost report. And so in a sense, the rural health clinic is a kind of a sub-provider, if you will, of the hospital, of the main parent. And on that note, it's a separate separate provider-based entity of the hospital, and it's the M series of the hospital cost report.
This is Mark Lynn. One thing too to remember is that if you have a change of ownership, or you know you're terminating from the program, you have 150 days from the date of that termination, so keep that in mind, that is one of your deadlines. Also, is that you're going to need to pull your PSNR in the IASIS system, and that thing is a bear, so you need to start early on that. You can't be waiting until, you know, May the 15th, and of course, due May 31st to start trying to get your credentials for that. That's going to be a sure fail, and the MACs are much tougher than they used to be on, you know, Henry Vick. You could just shoot them an email, and 5 minutes later, you had a PSNR. Those days are gone, so keep that in mind. You have to start early to try to get that PSNR.
Yeah, and this is David James. Just to expand on that a little bit, Mark, is I know that a lot of the approvals for the change of ownerships and terminations are lasting longer than that 150 days. You can't really file the cost report until you have that approval if it's not on your fiscal period. Normally they will allow 30 days after that change if it's past the 150 days, but I've actually seen some of the intermediaries you require those cost reports to be filed immediately. So you got to watch out for those change of ownerships and terminations.
Okay, anybody else want to contribute? No, I apologize. I got cut off there. So it sounded like you guys did a pretty good job on covering that.
Yeah, so this is Steve Russo. The only thing I was going to add was, even though there's a hard and fast deadline and Medicare will put you on a withhold if they don't receive it within like a week or 10 days, there is no penalty or interest accrued. So if the provider gets a cost report in late to Medicare, it's more of a withhold thing than a penalty or interest issue.
Okay. All right. Any questions on the phones there, operator?
Yes, I do have a few. The first one is from Jackie Hinnan. Your line is open.
Go ahead, Jackie. And could you tell us where you're from? I apologize. I should have been asking that of others. Go ahead, Jackie.
Please check your mute.
I think it was supposed to be for Vicki Hinnan.
Okay. Well, your line's open, so you have the opportunity to ask your question. Where are you from?
I'm from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Great.
Okay. I am calling on CPTs 99307 through 99310. We've been having them drop to a HICFA instead of staying on a UB, and I was wondering if there's supposed to be a Part B. When I went in to read stuff on Medicare, it sounds like they're all Part B. The place
what's
of service.
Those codes for? What's the verbal?
I didn't write that down. I know the diagnosis on most of them are. Pardon? They're like subsequent nursing. The nursing homes.
Yeah, 99307 is subsequent nursing home visit. For subsequent nursing home facility care per day, So it's all for nursing facility care.
And some of the diagnosis is like mental health on them. So I'm just wondering if they should be at Part B.
Well, it depends. If you pay your providers to while they're in that nursing home seeing. Oh dear.
Whoa, who's that coming from?
I don't know. To seeing residents, then it's part of your rural health clinic. If you pay your providers separately for those visits, then it's part of your non-rural health clinic. So it depends on how your providers are paid. So if you've got those costs in your cost report, they're part of your rural health clinic visits. And, you know, if you don't, it isn't.
But aren't these these are the mandatory monthly visits to a skilled nursing facility patient? So wouldn't they just be billed as rural health clinic visits?
They should be.
As an RHC encounter with the appropriate site of service being the SNF.
Which is 5255.
5255. Yeah, are you doing it with the correct revenue code?
Oh, they didn't land on a UB, so we had like a place of service of 14 and.
Oh, no, it's got to be on a UB, and it's got to be a 525 revenue code with your charge, and it goes just like you would have any other claim
any other
in
things.
Your clinic.
Just like a rural health clinic encounter. I suspect what may be happening is because you're billing it with that place of service, it's rejecting it. If you bill it with the right revenue code, you may find more success. But those should all be rural health clinic visits.
Okay, that's what I needed to know. All right, thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, operator. Next call from the phone line.
The next question is from Debbie Lee.
Go ahead, Debbie. Where are you
calling? Debbie here in Eureka, California. I sent you several texts, or not emails, last week, and I was trying to find out, because we're a rural health clinic, I know all of you are there that can help me here. Does my FNPs or PAs have to be enrolled into the Medicare program if we're only seeing patient visits in the office? I have been
so they're only doing RHC. They're only seeing RHC patients. You're not billing anything out on a 1500 for those RHCs. Everything they do is submitted as part of a UB RHC claim.
Yes. Because
okay,
they have deactivated a lot of the anybody who hasn't used their NPI number, they get deactivated. I was told to use the 8550
It's the letter O. It's not a zero.
That's yes, the letter. I'm sorry, the letter zero. I was told to use that form and send it in, and then I talked to someone from Medicare, and they stated no. It doesn't work that way. You have to enroll your mid-levels into the Medicare program. I've been checking around with a lot of different clinics, and as far as I can tell, the mid-levels are not enrolled into the Medicare program. They work under the NPI number of the practice because we are an RHC billing to Cahaba.
Okay, I think we've got it. I can give an answer, but you guys go ahead, and then if I have anything to add, I'll add it. But go ahead. One of the consultants want to take that? Or do you want me to?
Well, I would just say the first thing is that each individual provider needs to have an NPI number.
They all have an NPI number.
Okay, so they're being on the claim. So the only thing that from a billing standpoint, if they're only providing services out of the rural health clinic, as long as they have a valid NPI number, and if we're only talking Medicare, they wouldn't necessarily need to have a Part B billing or an NPI number to bill Part B. I mean, it'd be the same number. They wouldn't have to have a Part B number, I guess.
No, but okay, here's the reason. The 855 is an enrollment form. Just
right.
As the 855I, 855R.
Right.
The 855O, and the O stands for ordering and referring. Last
right.
year, Medicare mandated that in order for a claim to be paid to a provider to whom a Medicare patient had been ordered or referred, an order for a service or referred, the referring provider or the ordering provider had to be enrolled in Medicare. Because you have rural health clinics where the provider may not be submitting claims, therefore their enrollment would be deactivated, CMS created the special 855-0, which is for providers solely for the purpose of ordering and referring. So if your provider is going to refer patients, let's say to a radiologist, or order a DME or order lab, they would they need to be enrolled in Medicare in order for that lab or that imaging professional or whoever is the one who is fulfilling that order or taking that referral. The referring provider, ordering provider has to be enrolled, and you use the 855-0. If they're not doing ordering, referring, if they're not going to submit any claims, then they don't need to be enrolled. But those would be the two reasons. Either they're going to submit a claim to on a 1500, or they're going to order a service or refer a patient. They have to be enrolled solely for that purpose. And that's true whether it's the doc, the PA, or the NP.
Correct, yep.
Okay, so I can use the 855-0. I did send
Correct.
In one for one of my nurse practitioners, and it was rejected, as usual, stating that I needed to enroll them into the Medicare program. But I think Medicare, you know, trying to tell them that we're a rural health clinic also, and you're talking directly to Medicare, they get they're confused as to, you know.
Okay.
Rural health clinic versus, you know, private office.
Okay. What I've stated to you is a policy. If they're not following it, then contact me offline, off of this call. Give me the details, and I'll contact the CMS enrollment staff in Baltimore and ask them to look into why this is being rejected, because it shouldn't be rejected. So somebody's confused somewhere, but let's deal with that as a casework problem. But
okay.
The policy, as I've articulated, is what the policy should be.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you, Bill.
Okay. Operator, next question online.
The next question is from Jackie Van Shuttle. Your line is open.
Okay.
Hi. Can I ask two questions?
Okay, fine.
Okay. My first question is, we are billing on the same date of service. One service is a 521 revenue code for an office visit, and the second visit is on a separate claim with a 900 revenue code for behavioral health, and the 900 is always getting rejected. We, as a duplicate service, or a duplicate claim, duplicate service, and when we called NGS, they indicated we had to put a modifier 59 on there, but the problem is that CPTs aren't usually sent with those because it's a revenue line rolled up.
It needs to be on one claim form to begin with.
Even though they see two providers for two separate issues?
Even though, yes.
Okay, so it should be on one claim form.
With one being the 521 revenue code or whatever revenue code, and then the other one being the 900 revenue code. And that's when you'll get paid two per diems because one's an ailment visit and one's a mental health visit on the same day.
Okay, so one claim, two lines, two revenue codes.
Correct.
Okay, well, we'll give that a try and see if that works.
Can I have your name again and where you were calling from?
Oh, I'm sorry, Jackie Van Shuttle from Cadillac, Michigan.
Great. Thank you, Jackie.
And then my second question is on Medicare credit balance reports. When we're filling in the method of payment, I normally put an X in there. We don't normally send a check with our credit balance report. What we would like to do is have them recoup from our checks that they send us. Is that the best way to go about that?
That's the way to go about that.
Okay, because it does take them a long time to recoup, and I just wondered if we were doing this correctly.
You are correct, and they will take it back on a future remittance advice, but sometimes it's not very soon.
Okay, and that's what's happening. I just wanted to make sure that we were doing that correctly. correctly. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jackie. I'll take a couple that were emailed in. This is from Joe Cottrell from Portsmouth, Ohio. I recall somewhere a website mentioned where we could view the number of encounters Medicare has on file. Am I remembering this correctly? And if so, what is the site? Would that their be their PS&R report?
I think that's the only place it is.
So how would they go ahead and get their PS&R report?
They would have to be signed up with the IACS system. That's that, I don't remember what it stands for, but that's the PS&R web-based system that you apply for the or request the PS&R in summary form, and then it gives you how many claims have been processed through whatever date that you put in on the request form.
Mark, did you have
Okay. Yeah, I don't have the exact website in front of me, but I know in April of this year, is it March or April, Medicare did release all of the Medicare Part D data for, you know, all the physicians in the country. Obviously, it didn't affect rural health clinic physicians as much because we bill the majority of our claims to Part A, and they didn't release that. But you could go on there, and I actually looked at a bunch of our clients, and in fact, we had one office manager get fired over it because you could go in there. You could see exactly what was billed to Medicare Part B. You could see the units. You could see the number of charges, and I could – well, I looked at it real quick and figured out that a couple of these guys were billing, you know, a bunch of stuff to Part B that was covered under the RHC benefit. So and it would – so that is a very useful tool. If you probably Google the Wall Street Journal article about Medicare, you know, release of Medicare Part B data, and it'll be around March, there's a link to that, and it's a very easy way to populate. In fact, they sort all the data by zip code, so you could just type in a zip code and bring up every doctor in that area. And when we do our annual evaluations, we will look at that data to see if there's anything being billed to Medicare Part B that shouldn't be, and we'll do some education of those folks. And, I mean, I was in the clinic last week, and we had to educate them. No, 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 this stuff does not go to Part B. You can't be doing that. So it's a very useful tool.
Okay, but that's just the Part B part.
That's
right.
The PS&R is what you're saying, yeah.
Right. The IACS, you go to – if you contact whoever you're – contractor is, they should tell you, be able to tell you how to sign up for IACS, and out of that you can then get your clinic's PS&R, what's called the PS&R report, and that will tell you the actual number of visits and what do they have in their system.
Well, the IACS is under the CMS.gov website as well.
Right. I just figured it'd be easier if they go through. Go ahead. IACS, I think.
Yeah.
It stands for individual or authorization. Individuals authorized access to the CMS computer system.
Right, so, and then you'll have to, each clinic has to identify who the authorized individual is, and then create that account.
Kind of to Mark's point before, that you got to stay on top of that because the password changes after once you get set up. And whoever the person is, and sometimes that person leaves, you know, goes to a different facility or whatever, but the password changes. I think, Mark, it's every 90 days or something like that.
Yeah, I think that they length it. It used to be every 45 or every 60 days. They've lengthened the time somewhat, but you're absolutely right. I love our clients lose their credentials, and they lose it, and it's too late to get them recredentialed by the time it's time to file the cost report. So that happens all the time.
Just as a tip, what we've done here at Wifley is our clients provide us that information, and we kind of maintain it for them because we're usually the ones doing their cost reports anyway.
Okay, great. Operator, we have calls online.
Yes, the next question is from Ashley.
Ashley, where are you calling from?
Hey, we're in Lake Providence, Louisiana.
Great. What's your question?
Our question is for our Medicare and Medicaid patients. We're a provider-based facility, owned by a hospital. So we were wondering if our patients for Medicare, Medicaid come in for a visit in the office that day, but are in, sent over to the hospital to be admitted into the hospital, are we allowed to count that visit for our clinic? Are we allowed to bill it, or how does that work?
This is Mark. I just listened to the technical assistance conference call this morning with Captain Axelrod, and the guidance from CMS is that it depends. It's and basically what Captain Axelrod said was that you ought to bill it to your MAC and see if they'll pay. It's because it's on an individual basis. And in some situations, they will pay it. In some situations, they will not. I know a lot of times, if that patient is admitted to the hospital and they go into observation instead of a hospital admission, that claim will typically reject if you have Cahaba as your MAC. Well, if they're admitted into the hospital, then both claims will tend to be paid. And all the MACs, they're all over the board on this issue. Some will only pay one of the visits. Some will pay both. Basically, I think what Captain Axelrod said was shoot them the bill and see if they'll pay it. So that's the guidance we've had so far.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Mark.
Yep. Each contractor seems to handle it differently.
Hey, Bill, this is Steve Russo. I think Medicare has a thing called the 72-hour rule, where if you're basically it's a provider that has its own outpatient clinic, you do outpatient diagnostics, and then you're admitted to the hospital. Those payments are included in the bundled payment for the inpatient stay under Medicare. So there's an issue with Medicare.
Some of the contractors are still allowing that to be billed because the way that they're interpreting it is it's a separate and distinct service and therefore is still billable even though there is the 72-hour rule.
Yeah, and the 72-hour rule really wouldn't apply to professional services.
Right.
And so typically, whether it's an outpatient, and obviously as a rural health clinic, even though it's considered an outpatient or it could be it's provider-based to a hospital, one must keep in mind that it isn't technically an outpatient department. It's an outpatient entity, the provider-based entity of the hospital. And there is a distinction there.
Right.
Right. Did that help, Ashley?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Okay. I'll take one of the emailed in questions. This is from Rhonda Cochran with the Marquette General Health System. On the Medicare cost report, we report the charges for preventive care. Can you tell me if that includes the following codes, G0402, 0438, 0439, as well as CPT codes 99381 through 99386? And 99391 through 99396. Anybody want to take a crack at that?
This is Mark Lynn. Oh, go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead, Mark. That's fine.
Go ahead, Mark.
The G codes, it would include, because those are covered RHC benefit. Typically, the easiest way is to get that information is in that ACEs, I can't pronounce it right. I just thought the pain in the ass system. The ACEs system is they have two different reports you should pull if you're doing your cost report. There's a 710 and a 71S. And the 71S will list your preventive charges that have processed. So that's the form I would use, and that would include those G codes. But the last series of codes that she listed out there, those were actually physicals, and Medicare to this day still does not cover physicals, so those would not be covered in that benefit. So those would be excluded. Those 99, I forget the exact code, but they, I think those were physical codes, and those would not be covered.
99381 through 99386 and 99391 through 99396.
Yeah, those I don't believe would be covered. Janet, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
You're right, Mark. You're absolutely right. And that line on the cost report is for the Medicare preventive services only. And so those are not codes that Medicare even covers.
Right. Okay. All right. Hopefully that answered her question. Operator, how about somebody from the phone lines?
The next question is from Crystal Arnold.
Crystal, where are you calling from?
Blountstown, Florida.
Great. What's your question?
Okay. I have two questions, and I'll ask them quick. The first one was, is there any way you could give me a brief rundown for flu vaccines for Medicare, how the different billing with the G code and the Q codes? Because I'm new to this, and I'm not sure what the difference is when you're billing for Medicare.
Medicare doesn't pay for flu shots on an individualized basis. It pays for flu shots through your cost report.
Correct, but so, do we need to bill those under the G-code?
No, you don't do no billing for them. It's all disclosed by the number of total flu shots given on your cost report and then the total of your Medicare-only flu shots given on your cost report, along with the cost of your vaccines and supplies and the ratio of your administration for that piece of it. So you don't send any claim in with a flu or pneumonia shot on it to Medicare.
Okay.
Anybody want to talk about how to put together the roster and the need to maintain a roster for that?
This is Mark. All you have to do is put the patient name, the HIC number, or the Medicare number on there and the date that you gave them the shot. And you need to list your Medicare patients for your influenza and your pneumococcal. That is the log you need to prepare and give that to whoever prepares your cost report because that will need to be submitted with the cost report in order for you to get paid.
Well, and this is David. A lot of times what you'll do is you can enter those as a zero charge through your system so your billing system can actually spit out the log through a query.
Right. That's kind of how we – I was just making sure that that's how we needed to be doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bill, this is
okay.
Robin Veltkamp.
Okay. Go ahead, Robin.
I just wanted to just emphasize again that there are two separate logs. One is flu, one is pneumo. But also this is only for straight Medicare. When you are dealing with your Advantage Plan Medicares, your HMO Medicares, those are billable using the full billable code. And those are paid through the Medicare Advantage plan, either through their individual costing reports if they have them, or as a fee for service.
Okay, great. Thank you for the clarification. You had a second question, Crystal?
Yes, I'm sorry, and I'm not really sure how to ask this one. But is there anything because we're provider based? Any of the Part B services that we're supposed to be billing under the hospital Part B? Or does it all go through our clinic?
This is Robin again. As a provider base, all of your technical components of the support services, non-professional, so that would be the taking of an X-ray. That would be the taking of an X-ray, the taking of an EKG, any of the technical components, those are billed under the main entity.
Okay. Well, then how do you keep that separate? Does it come through as in being paid?
It gets paid to your hospital.
Okay.
Because the hospital's provider number is on those claims, so all the payments will go to that provider number.
Okay.
Essentially, you're submitting two claims for such. For example, a lab or an X-ray that was done in conjunction with the rural health clinic. If you're a critical access hospital, that lab and X-ray would go on an 851 bill type under the hospital's provider number, not the rural health clinic's provider number.
Correct. And again, this is Robin. The most challenging thing for provider-based entities that I have worked with is finding a mechanism of the services rendered within the rural health clinic and taking those labs that were performed in the clinic and making sure that they are getting billed under the main entity without trumping any of the labs that may have been done within the entity. An example, let's say I'm a patient in your RHC clinic and you do the draw along with a urinalysis. You have to find a mechanism within your system to include that urinalysis that was done in the clinic along with maybe that comprehensive metabolic panel that was sent to the hospital on the same day because they all have to go into one claim. Medicare will only pay one bill type per day. And so that tends to be one of the largest challenges of yes. provider-based clinics.
Yep.
Okay. Is there any way I can get a list? Where would I find a list of exactly what needs to be are the technical codes or billing services?
Well, one way to look at that is, you know, one kind of fail-safe way to do it is look at the Medicare fee schedule. And wherever, like, you know, for the lab or even probably the X-ray is more prevalent where they have a professional component and a technical component. And so the technical component, it'll list, if there's a technical component or what's called using a TC modifier for radiology, for instance, or even other diagnostic type services, those would all be billed under the hospital.
So and like EKGs also?
Yep, the technical component only. For EKGs, I don't remember the codes, but there's, you know, there's the global one, and then there's the two separate ones, the professional read only and the actual technical piece. So you would bundle, for instance, the professional with the rural health clinic encounter and bill that as one line item with the 521 revenue code with the 711 bill type for the rural health clinic, and then for the actual technical component of the EKG, that would be billed under the hospital's provider number. And if you were a critical access hospital, that would be under the 851 bill type.
Yeah, we are. Okay.
And again, this is Robin. And another thing that you need to make sure you're doing is that when you set this system up, you're doing it for your Medicare services rendered within the clinic.
Right.
You can still bill the globals. You can still do all of that to your commercials.
Right.
So you're only extracting for your Medicare services when you're billing in this format.
Okay.
All right.
Next up, I'll take a question that was emailed in. This is from Char Fowler, but it doesn't indicate where she's from. She says, we are a new RHC. We have Medicare patients who come for allergy injections at least once a week or twice monthly. What is the correct way to bill for these multiple dates of service?
Again, this is Robin. The allergy injections would typically fall under the injectable guidelines where you can attach it to a visit 30 days prior or 30 days post. Many clinics choose to not invest in that tracking. But you can bill it, but it would have to be attached to a visit, again, 30 days prior or 30 days post.
Right. A visit solely for the purpose of the allergy injection would not qualify as a rural health clinic billable visit. What Robin is suggesting is that you can attach it or bill it out, and you would be able to collect the beneficiary copay for that, but it would not in and of itself constitute a rural health clinic visit because it does not meet the test of a billable RHC visit.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, Bill, that's what is called incident two under
right.
the RHC guidelines. And so the way I describe incident two, especially if you're an independent RHC, is you ain't getting paid because that, you know, that visit or that incident, that occurrence does not create a visit, like you said, and so you're not going to get paid a visit for that. But you can bundle it, and what you're going to do is use the data service where there's an office visit. Just use that one data service. Don't spam bill, but use if the office visit occurred on September 30th, then use that data service and bundle everything into that revenue code 0521, and change your charge from, you know, say it's a 99213 for 100. And you've added $150 of allergy shots, change that revenue code 0521 from $100 to $250. And like they said, that's going to increase your copays from 20% of $100 to 20% of $250. And that's how you're going to generate revenue for your clinic. So, but it's hard to do because owning your claims is difficult. Filing adjusted claims is difficult. I mean, it's not a great situation for RHCs.
I would also, though, add, let me, because I think this is an important point, the fact that a service may not generate a billable visit does not necessarily mean you're not getting paid for that service. The cost of the drug, the cost of the personnel, the space in which the service was provided is all included in your cost report. So it's built into your all-inclusive rate. So even though it's not a billable visit, doesn't mean that you're not getting paid for it. It means that the costs for that have already been built into your all-inclusive rate.
Bill, I'm assuming that everybody's over the cap. I guess as an independent,
that's why I said independent.
I think
the cap is an issue, but
yeah.
I something has to have costs to get you to the cap.
Yeah, you're right.
And those costs are now which cost it was that maybe put you over, we don't know, but you know all those costs are captured on your cost report. Okay, we have a caller. Question from a caller, operator?
Yes, I have a question from Lori Mashinsky. Your line is open.
Lori, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Columbus, Texas.
Great. What's your question?
We're a rural health clinic, and I don't know if this is something new, the Prevnar 13 being given to our Medicare 65 and older patients. I'm just wondering how do we bill for those?
This is David. This is something that we've had some difficulty with some of the intermediaries. I know specifically Cahaba had said that you will normally include those on your log as a pneumococcal injection, and they will pay those through the cost report. We have finally gotten some clarification. Cahaba was not allowing those because they considered those to be an injection for a child injection. But they have expanded those, you know, sometime, and now they do have a geriatric version of that. And so, yes, they are now covering those. We do have guidance from CMS on that, and, yes, you will include those on your pneumococcal log for reimbursement through the cost report.
Okay, so no filing them, just they need to be shown on the cost report?
There's a separate form that is a part of the cost report specifically for capturing flu and pneumo. And you get 100% of your costs. So that's why you need the log, and that's why you need to be able to track and report the cost of your drug, the personnel, et cetera, and then you get 100% of that when you reconcile your cost report.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Let me take an emailed in question. Can you please cover the topic of global billing in an RHC? Also, the billing for OB services for Medicaid. If you don't want to get Medicaid, is state specific, but anybody want to just specifically address global billing? When I presume this means you have a patient who perhaps has gone to the hospital, has surgical procedure, and there is a follow up visit. Whether or not you can bill that as a rural health clinic visit.
Bill, this is Janet. This is going to depend on how it was billed by the provider that performed the surgery at the hospital. If that provider has billed with a 54 modifier of the procedure only, then each and every visit at the clinic can be a visit that's billable as a rural health clinic visit. If they did not put that 54 modifier on there, if they come in the clinic for follow-up, the clinic is not allowed to bill a visit for that particular follow-up. Now, the clinic can always bill for visits of the patient's ailments, but not the follow-up.
Okay.
And any service that started in the clinic doesn't have globals attached to it, so each time they come in the clinic after the initial procedure is a visit within the clinic if it's a medically necessary visit.
Okay. Hey, operator, question from a caller?
The next question is from Stephanie Kilgore.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
Hi.
Where are you calling from?
How are you? I'm calling from Franklin, Tennessee.
Great. What's your question?
I have a billing question. It is in regards to preventive services. We are still receiving denials for the G0101 code as a standalone procedure. We are billing it with a 521 rev code, but we are not billing it with any other procedures on the same day. So we are still getting denials for that. Can I get some clarification on the latest on how those should be billed so that we do get the all-inclusive rate payment?
Well, from what you said,
go ahead.
You've billed it correctly if the G code is on the claim and it is on that single line item. However, since CMS has made the clarification that there are those specific standalone codes, I don't think that the MAC systems have been brought up to date and may still be erroring it out in their system. Not that it shouldn't have been paid, it probably should have, but from what I have read lately, that it's going to take a while, and I don't know what a while means, for them to get their systems up to date so that they won't error out.
Okay. So another question on that, and you probably are very well versed in the Rural Health Clinic Center on the CMS website, but when it gives the sample billing for screening pelvic and clinical breast examination, it does list it with two line items. I was interpreting that as perhaps it needed to be billed with an E&M code, but you're stating that it should be paid without any other codes and as a standalone. The MACs just haven't been brought up to speed yet. Am I understanding that correctly? Okay.
Is that what you understand, Bill?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right those are clarified and those are billable as standalone visits. That was clarified and corrected by Medicare. So if they're denying it, something's wrong internally in the system, but those should process through and you should get paid on them.
Bill, this is Mark. You would need the HCPCS code on there because there is a frequency guideline on those particular services, and those, you know, there's a couple of exceptions when you have to use HCPCS codes in the UB04, and those preventive services are one of those. So I think the other one is telemedicine. So those are the two exceptions. So you would have to have that HCPCS code on there for them to pay. So that may be the issue if you're not putting that HCPCS code. I don't know with the G code on there. Also, that just came out as, I guess, the end of August, probably the 1st of August. They expanded that list. Initially, they only had two standalone services that they would pay. There was the IPPE and the annual wellness. And then I think the bill and some lobbying that the association did, I guess it got expanded to five different services, the pelvic exam, glaucoma screening, and then there's, I don't have it in front of me, there's one other one as well.
Prostate and breast.
Okay, so there's five now that are standalone services. The rest of those, that big, huge listing of preventive services, those are incident two services, and you'll have to have an office visit to attach with that in order for you to bill for that service.
Yep.
And make sure that even though you have put your G code on the claim, make sure that it's not getting scrubbed off through your clearinghouse. Because
okay.
I have had that happen within the last week, too.
Okay. So if it's going over electronically to CMS as an encounter and not the G0101 code as an example, they would deny it because they are seeing it as an encounter, not the G code.
Well, your G code is basically telling them what you did that allows it to be classified as a rural health clinic visit. And then what Mark is saying, because many of these have a frequency that Medicare will pay for it once a year, once every 2 years, you need that so that Medicare can verify that they're not paying it more frequently than what is permissible under the Medicare policy.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right. Operator, we have a question from the phone line.
Yes, I have a question from Sarah. Your line is open.
Sarah, where are you calling from? You on mute? Or did you give up? Last chance for Sarah. You there, Sarah?
Yes, sorry. I'm sorry. So I also sent the same question into the email. It pertains to the state of California Medi-Cal Code 18 RAP reconciliations.
Okay.
The question we have is, if there is a patient that has Blue Shield, say, for primary and managed Medi-Cal secondary, I guess the first question is, are we supposed to bill the RAP for that? And if we are, do we count the primary payer, say Blue Shield's payment, in our reconciliation?
First, and to all of our listeners, Medicaid questions, I don't know if we have somebody who can answer that because they are so state-specific. Steve, I know you're in California. I don't know whether you have much experience with California Medicaid or if any of our other folks have worked with California Medicaid. Has anybody had any experience with California Medicaid?
Yes, Bill, this is Steve. Yeah, I do. So the only question I had was on the Blue Shield. Was that a Medi-Cal managed care program or was that commercial?
It's the primary would be commercial, and then they have managed Medi-Cal as secondary.
Right. So basically, you're either going to build code 02 or an 18. So that one's probably code 18. You're going to build a wrap to the Medi-Cal program.
Correct. Okay. We would build, like, Blue Shield primary. The secondary would go to our managed Medi-Cal payer partnership, and then we'd bill a code 18 to the state of California.
Yes. Yes.
So on those ones, when we do the reconciliation to the state of California, are we to include the Blue Shield payments as part of the visit to the state?
On the reconciliation, they want you to include payments only from Medi-Cal managed care providers, not from commercial plans. So I got to think about the form. It's really for Medi-Cal managed care, not the commercial. So I don't think it would go on the reconciliation, but I'd have to double check the form.
Okay.
Because it's commercial. It's only the secondary going to Medi-Cal. So I don't believe the commercial payments go on the reconciliation for PPS reconciliation for Medi-Cal.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Can you say that again?
You don't put payments from commercial plans on the reconciliation, so I don't believe the payment from Blue Shield would be on the reconciliation.
Okay, and we don't include that visit in the reconciliation either? Because we are billing a code 18 for it.
Right. You would count the code 18. Again, I don't have the form in front of me, so I just don't want to tell you wrong. I don't have to look at the form. I could let you know. I'm not positive.
Can you, Sarah, or Steve, whichever, if you want, Steve, if you don't mind, you want to give her your email address and then you can communicate directly?
Sure.
Sure, if you can give me it, that'd be great.
Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, it's srusso, R-O-U-S-S-O, at hfsconsultants.com.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, I have a question online. It says, we're an independent RHC and operate two clinics. My question is regarding RHC visits. Do we include all payers, Medicare, Medicaid, private, and third party, or just Medicare-only visits on Worksheet B of the cost report?
This is Mark. All visits.
Okay. Operator, how many questions do we have online?
I have four more in queue.
Okay. To the folks here, I know we're up on the hour, and if you need to drop off, we certainly understand. If you can stay on, we'll be happy to do that. One of the things that I will do for all of the folks is we will send out, if you guys don't mind, we'll send out everybody who's participated today, your names on the listserv with your email address if folks wish to contact you directly after the call for a follow-up or if they have other questions. So, operator, why don't we finish out with the calls that we have online?
The next question is from Tony John.
Tony, what's your question, and where are you calling from?
Hello, I'm calling from Cadillac, Michigan. I have a question relating to a previous question and one small additional one. When you spoke to Jackie Binshuttle regarding the two revenue codes on one claim for a social worker and a physician, how do you show the second provider on the UB, and do you need a modifier?
you don't show the second provider on the UB. It is all billed through the Rural Health Clinic, and the provider of service is basically it's going to be one or the other. It's just Medicare that they're having both a mental health visit and an office visit on the same day.
Okay, and we've been told a 59 modifier applies, but I didn't agree with that, as the modifiers don't show on the UB. Is that correct?
No.
That is correct, yes?
No, that's correct, or no, that's incorrect.
That is correct. They do not show on the UB.
No modifier.
No, CPT codes are required.
Okay. My other quick.
It's a preventive service.
Okay. My other quick question is I bill for OB services as well, and your occasional Medicare patient that gets pregnant, we use a dummy code to record their prenatal visits. So a claim does not go out for every prenatal visit unless they have an additional. I'm sorry?
It should. A Medicare patient, each visit is a payable visit through Medicare for a pregnancy. And then the delivery only is charged at the time of delivery.
So our consultant said to send one revenue code with the two from date of service.
No.
Okay.
Each visit, each day, each time.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, operator, next call.
The next question is from Ashley.
Is this Ashley from Louisiana again?
Hey. Yes, it is. Well, it's
actually
Pam.
Okay, Pam.
I filed a claim with the G code, a preventive exam, also with the V70.0, but the claim didn't pay in full. Is it supposed to pay in full?
When you say it doesn't pay in full, you didn't get your encounter rate?
Well, I did, but it left like 20% for the patient to pay. Is that correct?
Are we talking the introductory to Medicare physical or?
No, I did the G0439.
G0439.
And your wellness subsequent visit.
Yeah.
What Medicare is doing is they're paying you their 80% of your rate. However, through the cost report, you receive that additional copay that you should have gotten paid.
Oh, okay, so they don't pay the whole thing in full. Now, they would pay it if it was a deductible.
Correct.
Well, the deductible is waived.
Deductible applied.
Okay.
Right,
okay.
Deductible is waived.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
This is Julie Quinn. I would be skeptical that G-code is being counted as a preventive service if they are charging a coinsurance on it, because when it gets to, as Mark said, 71S PS&R with the preventive, there's no coinsurance shown on any of the claims that funnel to that preventive PS&R. If you're seeing a coinsurance on the claim, I don't think it is truly being counted as a preventive service.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was kind of skeptical of that too. Thanks, Julie, because I was under the impression they were supposed to be paying that at 100%. And by using the HCPCS code the copay is waived and Medicare pays 100%.
And that's what I'm seeing on the back end. When it gets to the preventive PS&R, you see no coinsurance, no deductibles.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. This is Mark. Yeah, what Julie says is absolutely right. That's absolutely right. There's no copays or deductibles on that. I've never seen one on that PS&R. That's absolutely right.
Okay.
So did I bill it correctly?
Well, is your code actually showing on your claim for sure?
I don't know. I don't know what it looks like as it goes through.
Okay, make sure that you know what it looks like before. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Next caller online.
The next question is from Lisa Ammerman.
Go ahead, Lisa. Where are you calling from?
Mile Bluff Clinic in Mawson.
Wisconsin.
My question is regarding also the G0101. I was actually on a call with NGS this morning. They had a J6 Part A ask the contractor teleconference. And when I asked the question to them, they told me that CMS has posted that there's a workaround for that code, that we're supposed to bill an E&M code with charge for a penny in order to get paid for the G0101.
What? I've never heard that. Anybody else have ever heard that?
Nope.
Yeah, Bill, that's in the SE. They updated the SE 103. That's on the Rural Health Clinic Center website. It is on there. It is on there. That one penny's on there.
The SE 1039?
No, it's on the RHC website, the Rural Health Clinic Center website. Once you go past that little table, if you go down, there's a specific way to bill, and they show the example of showing a one penny, and then they drop down, and it's on two different lines.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah.
Wow.
Saw that too, Mark.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is correct for us to do that in order to get paid for that G0101 until they get their systems updated?
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay, thanks, guys. Next caller?
The last question I have is from Mindy Musgrave. Your line is open.
Okay, Mindy. And I have a couple that were emailed in we'll try to get to. But go ahead, Mindy. Where are you calling from?
I have a nurse practitioner that specialized in behavioral health. Should we bill her as Rural Health Clinic for all of her services?
You have an NP who is doing exclusively mental health visits in the RHC?
Yes.
And you want to know whether those should be billed as Rural Health Clinic visits?
Right.
As opposed to what?
As an outpatient of the hospital?
Well, I'll let you guys answer it. I think I would answer it, but go ahead.
Well, this is Jeff from Whipley. Generally speaking, especially now that the coinsurance and the Medicare, what Medicare pays and what the patient responsibility is equalized to a medical visit now, likely it'll be assuming you're a provider-based rural health clinic, correct?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Likely it'll be more beneficial to bill it as a rural health clinic encounter. However, depending on the volume of your rural health clinic and a lot of different factors, it may be worth just kind of looking, kind of doing a quick analysis whether or not it should be billed as an outpatient department, of a mental health outpatient department of the hospital apart from the rural health clinic. Including those visits could have an impact on your productivity screens. It's just without knowing more information, I wouldn't want to give you a direct, absolute answer, but in most cases, rural health clinic would be more advantageous.
And that's billed under the 900 revenue code?
Psychotherapy, that type of things, yeah, I would assume that's the case. And psychological services are billed with the the initial medical evaluation and so forth would be a medical diagnosis, which would be billed under the 521 revenue code.
Right.
But for all intents and purposes, it's the same reimbursement.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Was the 0521 you use for the initial diagnosis, and then for therapeutic services, you're going to use the revenue code 0900. But they're going to pay the same because of the Medicare Equalization Act of whatever it was a few years ago. Those mental health parity, it's now the same rate as if it was an RHC rate. There's no longer a discount there, so that's good.
Yep. Okay. We have a couple of emailed in questions I'd like to try to get to. This particular clinic is being undergoing a survey audit, and they were recently stated during an audit that inactive files had to be audited. How does one audit an inactive chart?
This is Robin Veltkamp from HSA, and what we typically have found is taking a sampling over the past year of inactive charts of why people left the practice and doing a summary review in the annual advisory meeting, not just the active charts, but during the annual advisory meeting, documenting some of the key reasons of why people have left and why this particular chart has become inactive. Is it because maybe kids have left because parents were relocated geographically for work? One of the key things that you also want to know is if people are leaving because of certain dynamics in the office so that you can use that information to make corrections, or if there's issues with a specific provider, again, you can make corrections. Typically what I have seen surveyors review upon certification survey is a sampling of why people have become inactive.
Okay. Bill, this is Mark. I've always had that question, and I've asked several surveyors over the years, what exactly, you know, are you shooting for on this inactive? I mean, why would we want to look at that? And nobody's ever given me a good answer. But I'll tell you what we do is I will look at closed charts. I'll say, print me off a listing of everybody that has passed away in the last year. And then also if it's a Quad A facility, you know, they have a rule that says that if somebody dies after a surgery that has occurred within your clinic within 30 days of that, you have to report that to Quad A. So I'll ask them that question if anybody's, you know, died within a surgery in the clinic within 30 days. And I'm basically looking at anybody that has died within the last year, and we'll look at their charts and just see if there's anything unusual about them. And what you're basically is looking for is there a bunch of young folks that are dying in the clinic? And I've seen a bunch of folks, and what will typically happen is you'll be in a clinic that has a pain management program that is out of control, and you go, and they're just handing out hydrocodone, whatever those Schedule II drugs are, like candy, and so you got some real problems in that clinic, and so you'll start with addressing those issues with the providers. Is okay, guys, somebody's going to go to jail if you don't change the way you're doing things. So, like I said, I look at closed charts, look at people that have died, and then if I don't have five that have died, then I'll look at the inactive charts and see why people have moved away.
Okay. Anybody else want to add on? Okay, another question emailed in. It says, we are a provider-based RHC in Nebraska. We have one physician, one PA, and two NPs. We're wondering if there's a certain percentage of charts that the physician has to sign off on for our PA.
This is I'm from Nebraska. No, there's no specific percentage of charts that have to be reviewed. However, you have to review some. So whatever your policy states that you have to review, that's your policy. I've seen in policies where they say they'll review all of them. I would caution against that, because once they find one that hasn't been reviewed, so there is no specific percent of charts that have to be reviewed.
Now let me add on to that. That is at the federal level. You would need to be in compliance with your state law or state regulatory mechanism. So while that may be the situation in Nebraska, you may be in a state where your state law mandates a particular percentage or number of charts to be reviewed as part of the Medical Practice Act in your state governing PA physician, NP physician relationships. So although there's not a federal minimum, it just says an appropriate number, you would need to verify that your state does not have a minimum that they would want reviewed as part of the State Practice Act.
Bill, this is Mark. Just to piggyback off what you just said, you know, effective July 11th of this year, you know, of course they changed the medical directorship rules from the federal side to where the medical director does not physically have to be on site once every 2 weeks, and they basically deferred to the state scope of practice laws for those nurse practitioners and PAs. We have been recommending everybody go back and review those scope of practice laws in detail, making sure that you are getting that percentage. You know, a lot of states it's 20% or 10% or whatever it is, and then as the federal requirement that what we have been using is having a separate quality improvement folder that we set aside, and the medical director will review 10 charts per quarter for every nurse practitioner and PA, and that's done separately
from that 10% review, and that chart is a part of the quality improvement process for the rural health clinic. So that's how we've been addressing those issues.
Okay. Well, we've certainly taken advantage of your time more than we had initially requested, so I want to thank you all for participating. As I said, we will put out a list of all the consultants and your email addresses first as a thank you, and then if individuals wish to contact folks who want clarification or any reason you might want to contact. But just as a reminder, today we've had, and I want to thank Steve Russo with HFS Consultants, David James with North American Healthcare Management Services. I didn't hear him, but if Glenn with Midwest Healthcare, Jim Estes with Jim Estes with Healthcare Horizons, Mark Lynn with Healthcare Business Specialists, Janet Lynn with Rural Health Development, Robin Veltkamp with Health Services Associates, Julie Quinn with Health Services Associates, and Jeff Johnson with Whipley. Thank you all for your participation today. I hope all of you will also think about participating in the or attending the Rural Health Clinic conference, which will be a little bit later in October in Reno, Nevada. Many of the folks that you've heard today will be speaking at that conference. It's a great opportunity to meet other rural health clinic providers, get some great education, and learn a little bit more about the Rural Health Clinic's program. And I hope if you didn't get a question answered, I apologize we weren't able to get to it. I would encourage you to consider posting your question on the Rural Health Clinic listserv. That's also a great place to get your questions answered. Many of these folks are active participants on the listserv, or your Rural Health Clinic colleagues from around the country will also take advantage of that opportunity. Finally, I'd like to thank the National Organizations of State Offices of Rural Health and the Federal Rural Health Policy, Office of Rural Health Policy, who are both supporters of this. If it were not for them, this program would not exist. Our next Rural Health Clinic call has not yet been scheduled. It'll probably be in a few weeks. The date, time, and subject matter on that will be announced. But again, I want to thank everybody for their time and today and their expertise and all that you're doing for the Rural Health Clinics program to make sure that individuals living in rural underserved communities have quality, cost-effective health care. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you during our next call.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Operator, I'm going to stay on for a minute.
Thank you. This does conclude today's call. Thank you all for joining. You may disconnect at this time.